Let's face it, parenting is the most important job on earth. Every day presents a stack of different challenges, and more often than not, the answer is outside of the box. On this podcast, we will offer proven strategies, interview pioneers in education, give insights into how to be successful parents, and even share our imperfect experiences of being parents ourselves.
Welcome, Justin Greer. Justin, great to have you. Tell us a little bit more about yourself and your business.
Thanks so much for having me, Brian. So I originally got into the field of counseling and psychology as a child and adolescent behavior coach. I worked specifically with children with really challenging behaviors, usually aggression. As I moved through my bachelor's degree in behavioral science, I actually started to take on clinical roles, and I ran a teen substance use group for about a year. And that was really interesting work, but extremely challenging work as well. After that, the clinic I was working at actually started to take on adult clients as well. And so I started to work with adults, and I eventually got my master's in clinical counseling and mental health. And so now I am a clinical counselor. I'm a licensed counselor here in the state of Arizona, and also a nationally certified counselor. And I still do clinical work for teens and for adults. And most recently, I've been doing work actually through the Department of Child Safety and doing some family counseling to help actually keep families together in a reunification program. And so along with that, I have three kids under the age of five of my own. I've got 11 siblings. I'm the youngest of 11 siblings. And I've got 42 nieces and nephews. So I've been around a lot of families. I've seen a lot of different types of approaches specifically to parenting. And that's really where my passion is. So now I also work as a parent coach for my brother's company, actually called Greer Method Complete Coaching, where we offer a comprehensive coaching solution for individuals that are looking to improve their business, their fitness, their finances, their relationships, so that they can have kind of a one-stop shop depending on what their own goals are.
Nice.
Yeah, very cool. So a lot of us, we've learned from our experiences, right? And just like you said, you know, growing up in a family dynamic like that, that'll teach you a few things.
Absolutely. Mostly not what not to do.
Right. So you were the one sitting back taking all the notes, right? And okay, this is what I'm gonna study.
So yeah, then,
you know, go ahead.
As the youngest, yeah, I really did quite a bit of observation, and mostly that's because that's all that there was left to do. Because when I went to ask my parents for a pet or something, they said, no, we've been through that 11 times. Absolutely not. And so all I could really do is sit back and watch, see the mistakes that people make, but also see the really great decisions that they made. And then, of course, try to follow in those footsteps.
Fascinating. And then it sounds like, you know, you got into some of the more difficult areas of psychology right out of the gate.
You
talk about aggression, that's no simple task. I mean, we all have our perception of what aggression looks like. And a friend of mine works with, you know, severely autistic children, and he has to wear gloves for biting. Mm. You know, is that the kind of aggression we're talking about, or is it, you know, how does that look?
Yeah. So in the behavior coaching that I did, it was never quite to that level. It was never quite that severe, but these were kids that sometimes were getting kicked out of school because of their aggressive behaviors, having a lot of challenges at home, sometimes even seriously hurting siblings or even parents at times. And so while we didn't see a lot of the biting, it was a lot more of the emotion regulation. These kids just hadn't learned how to regulate their emotions, hadn't had the proper training. And so they brought us in to be able to help provide some of that training, but also to transfer those skills to the parents so that the parents now know what to do to help their children when they're having a hard time.
Hmm. So obviously there's a lot of different ways to study psychology and a lot of different methods and different developers of different strategies. When you say the Greer method, that makes me think that you guys are following some kind of platform or some kind of approach. Can you give us an idea about what that looks like?
Yeah, absolutely. The Greer method is something that my brother had discovered was very similar with all of his executive coaching clients, that they started talking about feeling overwhelmed, feeling like they've hit a plateau or feeling like they're on a roller coaster. But there are some critical components to understand. Raise your hand.
Hey, can we get a discount?
Hello.
Well, and this is honestly, this is the power of this model, is because it resonates so well with people. But what we've discovered is that there are some actual critical components to be able to address overwhelm, to be able to get through plateaus, to be able to get off the roller coaster and make things a bit more consistent. And so it's kind of, it comes down to these three C's in the model: consistency, control, and correct. So consistency, of course, is having a process that we're going to use on a consistent basis. Being correct means we have the right tools and the right knowledge. And being controlled means that we're actually putting forth the right amount of intensity to be able to reach peak performance. If all of those three things are aligned, you will be at a stage of peak performance and be able to maintain without feeling overwhelmed, without hitting these plateaus, and without getting on and off the roller coaster all the time.
So do you find that it's kind of sequential, in the sense that sometimes they'll work with your brother, and then once that's kind of, they work on their personal stuff, because we always say, you know, put your oxygen mask on first.
100%. Right?
And do you find that once they can kind of settle themselves, that they can start kind of thinking of themselves as a parent and kind of changing that skill set?
Yeah. And so we use that Greer method as a backdrop for everything that we do. And it really rests on the foundation of the core four, which is vision, values, beliefs, and habits. And then we superimpose those really important principles onto the process of parenting, which is actually moving children from being completely dependent on the parents from when they're infants to being independent, being able to take care of themselves, being able to make good decisions, being able to problem solve really complex situations. And that process can feel like it takes a long time. It can feel like sometimes we're not making the progress that we want to make. Mm-hmm. But if we have the consistency, if we're correct with the tools that we're using, and if we're controlled in the intensity and the effort that we're putting into it, then we can actually make it through that process pretty simply. Mm.
So I want to dive a little deeper into this piece, because we're home as families a lot yep. more than we usually are. And we first talked about sibling rivalry and kind of that escalation. I know Brian's kids are pretty close in age, and so are mine. Mine are 11 and 9, and Brian's are, go ahead, Brian.
9, 7, and 4.
Right. And I know you said you have, they're all kind of grouped in the same, you know, and I think there's a direct correlation to, you know, how old they are to the level of, that level of that, you know, I wouldn't say aggression, but rivalry, right? Competition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and a lot of that has to do with kind of where they are developmentally. When the kids are closer together, they're oftentimes more likely to be in the same developmental stage as each other, which can create some obvious conflict. For example, if we have like the terrible twos or the terrible threes that people sometimes say now, but in that particular stage, kids are learning that they can be independent. So they want to do things on their own. But when you have an older sibling who's 4 or 5 years old that wants to help this child who really wants to just be doing things on their own, that's where a lot of the conflict can occur. And so the closer they are in age, to your point, there's going to be more conflict there.
Yeah, independent play doesn't really work that well when the other one's tapping you on the shoulder every 5 minutes, wondering what you're going to do with them, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the challenge for parents, is figuring out how do we make sure all of our kids' needs are met, especially when there's a wide range of ages.
And it's funny, because now we're, you know, with the 9 and the 7-year-old, they're both boys, but seeing them close together, the 7-year-old is also looking towards the 9-year-old almost to, you know, he's a little more easygoing. So he's a more of a follower when it comes to that. But the two of them, you know, like similar things. So I look at it like it almost ramps up the rivalry. Like they're playing well together, they're doing what they want together, and then all of a sudden, one doesn't agree with the other, and it's over.
Exactly. And things can escalate so, so quickly, especially between siblings, because there's already this heightened level of emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And you, I mean, and in your studies going back to, because you're, you know, college isn't that far, that long ago, so to speak.
No.
Not as long as it was for me. Like when they talk about that terminology, sibling rivalry, is there history behind that? Is that just something that we've, you know, one of these things that parents are, it's like a urban legend that, you know, every children have sibling rivalry, or is there some kind of background behind that?
So there is definitely some history there, and it's borne out by the things that we see. I mean, even us right now, we have these experiences where our kids seem to butt heads with each other. And it's kind of sometimes like jockeying for a position of power. We want to feel like we have control over a situation. And this is all of us. We want to feel like we have control over a situation. And so when there's something else there that we perceive as a threat to us having that power or that control, then of course there's going to be some conflict. In fact, that's one of the primary aims of anger, is that it's trying to remove an obstacle. So I get angry to remove an obstacle to a goal, and now that obstacle is removed because I hit my sister or my sibling, and now I have the toy. So, hey, it worked. It might not be the healthiest. It's definitely not the approach that we want our kids to take as parents, but it worked. It removed the obstacle.
So what's a good tip then to kind of go around that or you know, redirect it?
Yeah, so when it comes to sibling rivalry, there are a lot of really important principles to remember, but probably one of the most important is to have a long view in mind. What do we want our kids to actually do when they want a toy that their sibling is playing with? What can they do? As parents, we kind of get into this hole of telling our kids what not to do. We're telling them all the time what not to do. Don't do that. Stop jumping on the couch. We're always telling them what not to do instead of telling them what to do. And if we can make even just that small shift in our language, that actually helps the kids know, oh, I do have power. I do have control in this situation. Now I know exactly what I need to do. And so one of the first things that I would always encourage teaching our kids, and we teach our clients this, is to have your kids start asking questions. If they want something, a toy that one of their siblings is playing with, you're going to ask for everything first. Hey, may I please play with that? Just doing that alone can take a lot of the wind out of those emotional sails, because now I feel like I have control over the situation. I'm asking for this toy, and they might actually just give it to me. Now this is a much easier way than hitting my sibling, getting in trouble, getting the toy taken away. So I'm a lot more likely to actually go that route because it's much easier for me.
Mm. Well, and it's interesting that the last couple of our conversations have gone around the idea of language and the importance of language. Mm. And so in kind of the world that I was trained in, is that language is a vital part of the entire process, including, you know, if you have a child with auditory processing issues, you have to kind of express things in a different way. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, to take what you're saying and kind of go to another level is if they don't have the language, you sometimes have to give them the language, right?
Absolutely. In fact, what we use in our parent coaching is, I call it the twinkle, twinkle, little method. Because when we learn a song when we're younger, they give us all the words, right? Twinkle, twinkle, little star. Mm. But actually, as the kids start to learn and process, we can remove just one of the words and they'll fill in the blanks. But as parents, if we don't have a specific process that we want our kids to go through, then we always have to be jumping in. We always have to be managing those situations, solving their problems. And unfortunately, that keeps the kids dependent on us. So we're not able to move through this process of parenting that culminates in them, in our kids being independent. And so we want to have a process so that we can just start removing words and they fill in the blanks.
We're finding now, like, you know, the 9-year-old is kind of repeating to the 7-year-old what we're saying. And it makes sense, like what you're saying, in the sense that, you know, we're telling him no, then he feels he needs to tell his brother no. And now even the brother's telling the 4-year-old no. And, you know, She's the girl in the situation. She's a girl, so she's not going to put up with that at all. But you're right. It just changing it up and changing your language makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and it's so critical for our kids. But actually, Brian, what you mentioned is a really good indicator that you guys are consistent in what you're doing. If your kids are enforcing or doing the same things that you're doing as parents, that's actually a really good indicator and something that we look for with our clients is actually having the kids uphold some of the rules and some of the boundaries in the home as a way to measure consistency. Hey, this has been really consistent. So now my kids are keeping the other kids in line or at least enforcing those rules a little bit, which is great, great. If they're enforcing the right things, right? If they're just saying no, that might be an indicator that you guys are saying no too much. And so it's like, okay, well, how can we say yes a little bit more because we want our children to say yes to each other?
That's a good, the children emulate what we do, right?
Yeah.
100%.
It's amazing.
Interesting. So the kind of people that you guys work with, or not the kind of people, but the, are they a certain range of child that, or is it parents of all different ages working with kids of all different ages or?
So our target audience is working parents, parents that have these different responsibilities and they need some support and some help in this particular area with their families. And so it's really all age ranges. And what we try to do is actually give our parents tools that they can use now, but that they can also use in the future. We don't want to give them something for their two-year-old that's going to be obsolete in 1 or 2 years. We want to actually give them something they're going to use with their two-year-old and use with their 15-year-old, because that creates the consistency that we know is so important for kids. If that is consistent, then when they're 15 or when they get to those teenage years, which everybody's kind of nervous about, the consistency has been so set that they know exactly what to expect. They know what the boundaries are because it's been the same way their entire lives. And now they're going to operate inside of those boundaries.
So I had an interesting scenario come up where I used to recommend this book called Back in Control. You know, Bodenheimer, it's one of the older books. I don't know how much it's available now, but I recommend it to the parent and the parent had it delivered and the kid found it and got rid of it.
Kids know.
Right, kids know. So it's kind of like, you know, what would you recommend for a parent like that? Because I've always been big on, you know, the more of a positive approach, but now you have a situation where, you know, that maybe that doesn't, this is a teenager, by the way. This doesn't require a you know, maybe this requires a little bit more of a negative punishment kind of concept. It's always a count, you know, a balance saying, how does it, what works, you know?
Yeah. And especially for a teenager, but it sounds like what that book is talking about is the family structure, and the family structure can really get messed up when kids are parentified, meaning we give them, we give the kids parents responsibilities, or when there hasn't been any boundaries. The parents are just so uninvolved that there's nothing that's really very clear about who's in charge in the home. Because it sounds like that teenager that took the book and threw it away, it sounds like that teenager believes that they're in charge.
Right. And then it's like, yeah, how do you kind of create this, almost like a renaissance of parenting, you know, how do you create a new dynamic where you have the same individuals, but delivering things in a different, more consistent manner? That takes time. I think, you know, parents have to realize that. It's not, you know, you don't flip a switch on and the kid's like, okay, I'm good now. You know, it's going to take some time and some effort, right?
Yeah, and that's the whole parenting process, is that it does take time, but parents also need to be aware that the work has to be done. So I can wait until my kid is 15 years old before I start doing the work, but now I've got to do 18 years of work in 3 years. Instead of, hey, I'm going to start from day one and I'm going to do 18 years of work in 18 years, which is going to feel to me a lot lighter. It's not so heavy as if I have to start with a 15-year-old and try to get them up to speed within those 3 years. So it really is a lot about just being proactive, starting small. So especially when you're talking about family structure, you might have to start small. And it could just mean getting everybody on the same page. Hey, guys, we're going to have a family meeting tonight. we're going to talk about the vision. What do we want our family to look like in 6 months? What do we want it to feel like? I've noticed it doesn't really feel very good. It doesn't seem like anybody's getting along, but I don't think that's what we want. What do we want? Hmm. Once we have a target, we can always move toward it.
Hmm. So again, it goes back to communication, right? We got to start somewhere.
Absolutely. So
what is it like? What is a session look like? Do you guys have a start and stop point, or do you pick up kind of where they are?
It has to be where they are and what kind of challenges they're facing right then at that moment. And what we try to do is we move parents from this rule-based type of parenting style, which we all start there. Hey, you know, don't put your finger in the light socket. We all start there. That's a rule-based approach, but we actually try to move parents to a principles-based approach. So we're no longer talking about doing chores and speaking appropriately and all of these different behaviors, because we're going to spend all of our lives just putting those fires out. But actually, we're going to be talking about trust. Oh, you said that you were going to clean your room, so I want to be able to trust you, and it looks like it's not done. That makes it hard for me to trust you. So I'm going to talk about trust. I'm going to talk about respect. I'm going to talk about whatever values are important to the family and make sure that we are putting every decision through that lens. How is this helping to promote respect? How is it helping to promote trust? How is it helping to promote those values so that the families can actually make things a little bit lighter for themselves? They don't have to chase around the behaviors.
What are some good ways? Because I mean, I know I find myself, you know, trust, respect, that I have those ideals and I want them for the house and for the family, but a lot of times they're up here and they don't come out here. And it's like, yeah, we're rules based. And it's like, no, you know, not do this, don't do that. But how do you make that transition? Because we talk about this all the time. It's like, this is a perfect time for a reset. We're forced to be around each other more, which is great, but how do we institute or make that transition?
Yeah, and this is where it can be really helpful, especially you said your kids are 11
and 9 and 7.
9 and 7, okay. So this is a great opportunity to actually sit down and talk about these values, but you've got to define them. So trust is a big one where if you ask 5 people what trust means, they're going to give you 10 different answers. Mm-hmm. So really defining, okay, well, what does trust look like? What does it sound like in our home? And then getting some ideas from the kids too. Hey, what do you think is important? Now, 7 and 9 is going to be a bit tricky because they're still more concrete thinkers. You might actually still be using a little bit more of a rule-based type of approach, but you're in this place where you're going to start transitioning to this principles type of approach, or you're going to want to, because as they get into their teenage years, you're wanting something easy to fall back on, mm-hmm. something that, you know, hey, I've instilled these principles. I've instilled these values. This is what we do as our family or in our family. So you're really creating this sense of community, this sense of connection by getting everybody's buy-in. Hey guys, and just thinking about, hey, what are the top 1 or 2 or 3 values that we are going to live by in our family?
Interesting. You just made a really good point there. The idea that you're laying the foundation for the teenage years. I think we give ourselves, like, you know, these great excuses where they, you know, the aliens take them away and they bring them back, you know, and it's like, but the truth of the matter is you're right. I mean, the aliens take away the ones that you allow them to take away, right? If they're grounded and they're solid on their feet, well, then they can watch the spaceship go by.
Right. Yeah. And it's a
good point. Yeah.
And it's such a good scapegoat, right? Oh yeah. They're just teenagers. Right. And I think a lot of parents say that to remove the responsibility from themselves, because either they haven't built that foundation, or they're scared to, because now the family structure is all messed up. And so they're like, oh my gosh, what am I supposed to do now? Because if I try to reset the family structure, my teenager might run away. They might put a hole in the wall. They might, they can do some serious damage at that age because they're strong, they're capable. And so we sometimes have this fear, and that fear stops us from actually creating a situation that's going to be helpful for us as parents and also for the kids.
Mm. And so do you find when you have working parents that, some of the issues are solved by some of that one-to-one time. Like time is one of the things that's like an inhibitor of creating that family fabric. You know, it's a really difficult task. But you know, one of our speakers talks a lot about 20 minutes of reading 20 minutes to your kid makes the biggest change you can possibly make.
Yeah.
I think what she's really saying is that you're spending 20 minutes with your kid, right?
Exactly. So there was a interesting research article that recently came out about teens. 75% of teens reported that the only time that they talk with their parents is at dinner. Now, if you actually think about what we're usually doing at dinner these days, we usually got the TV on, or either we might not even all be eating together. We might be in separate rooms or eating at different times because everybody's got these different activities going on. And so how many teens are actually talking with their parents? I don't know. And that's kind of the scary thing. So finding an opportunity where we can have a specific time, even if it's that 15 minutes while we're all eating dinner together, or 20 minutes or whatever it is, that can be one of the most important things that we do as families. Shut the TV off. The table is a tech-free zone. We're going to sit and talk. And families that might be in this habit of watching TV or being on their phones during dinner, it's going to feel really awkward sitting down face to face with your teen, maybe not feeling like you have anything to say. And they're probably complaining that they don't have their phone or that the TV is not on or something. But what can we do? That's what we have to do. We have to persist through that awkwardness initially, so that we can start to open up real conversations.
Yeah, this is good stuff.
You drive home a point that, you know, a lot of times, and you mentioned that you guys work with executives that are feeling overwhelmed, but a lot of times that can be transferred over to the parenting piece, but it's little changes that can make a big difference. You know, like
100%.
We find sometimes we catch ourselves in the TV void at the end of the day, and it's like, no, let's take that time and go up and read books. Or, you know, it's like you said, let's eat dinner together. You know, we find ourselves tripping over that. Let's get the kids fed first. We'll figure it out after. You know, it's instead of making it more of like we're operating as a unit.
Yeah, absolutely. And that can actually help in lots of different areas. One thing that we try to do with our clients is actually help them kill multiple birds with one stone. So for example, this quality time piece, which is what we're talking about, you can easily integrate that into mealtime where everybody in the house is going to help with dinner. They're going to either help prepare dinner, set the table, we're all going to sit down and eat together, and then everybody's going to help clean up. Now you've got probably a good hour or maybe even more where you're actually spending quality time with the kids. You're working alongside them shoulder to shoulder. You're talking, you're having fun, hopefully most of the time, but you're also teaching them some really important skills that they're going to use well after they're out of the house.
Well, you know, to spin back to that sibling rivalry, really, aren't we saying that they're both the siblings that are, you know, in confrontation are vying for your time?
Yeah.
Right. And attention, I should say. Attention more than time, but time leads to attention, right?
Yep. It's kind of these two buckets that kids have that they're trying to get filled, and they need them filled on a daily basis. They have this control, this power and control bucket, and then this attention bucket. So we can fill those for them in really healthy ways, or they'll try to fill it themselves, which means that they might act out because they know that that gets 100% of your attention. If they hit their sibling, now all of your attention is on them. They don't care if it's positive or negative. They just want that bucket to be filled. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of what we talk about when it comes to sibling rivalry is being proactive in what we're doing. One of the easiest ways to start building a connection, a positive connection between siblings, is instead of having one of your kids be the bearer of bad news to the other kid, hey, it's time to go, you know, dad said for me to come get you, it's time for us to leave the park. Or, hey, you know, we have to, dad said that you have to clean up the yard. We actually want to switch that dynamic and have our kids be the bearers of good news. So instead of me, maybe I surprised my kid with a candy bar. coming home from work. But instead of me doing that, I'm actually going to give the candy bar to their sibling and say, hey, why don't you go take this to your brother or your sister? Mm. So now you're actually starting to build a connection, a positive connection between our kids, things that you would have already done anyway, but now you're focused on helping them develop that relationship.
Excellent. That's a great takeaway.
Yeah.
Bunch of great takeaways, Justin.
How
do we find out more about what you're doing? Where are you? I know you're on LinkedIn. I found you there.
Yeah, you can definitely find me on LinkedIn. You can email me at justin@greermethod.com and get connected with our parenting group. And we can send you information about that. Just shoot us an email. And we'd love to have these parents. They come in on a weekly basis. It's about a 45, 50-minute call where we actually do live coaching. Talk about your particular challenges. We talk about some things that are pertinent to parenting specifically. And then we help you overcome those challenges with some of these tools. And it goes back to that model. We want to make sure the parents are correct. We want to make sure it's things that they can be consistent with. And we want to make sure that it's the right intensity and effort to solve some of these challenges.
Awesome.
Great stuff.
Yeah. No, thank you. And we'll include all that in the show notes. Okay. We really appreciate you. It gave us a lot of takeaways, stuff that I'm going to implement. I don't know about you, Darren.
I got 6 candy bars I'm going to hand to my daughter like right now. Take these upstairs. Great stuff. All right,
Justin, thanks so much, you guys.
Justin, thanks for having us. Really, thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Sound Foundations for Parenting podcast with your hosts, Darren and Brian. Find them on social media at Sound Foundations for Parenting. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please leave a review and subscribe. And we'll catch you next time on the Sound Foundations for Parenting podcast.